This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 10th of August 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 10th of August, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Sonia Phillips and Jean Gardner. Now your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Deborah Crammer.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now the main headlines this week are GPs fear over new surgery, plans floated to end free passes, fundraising Mad Hatter Tea Party remembers Bonnie. But can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
GP fears over new surgery. Uncertainty over the future of the NHS is one of the reasons for the refusal of GPs to agree to move to a new doctor's surgery in Winchester City Centre. The doctors of St Clement's have yet to strike a deal with the City Council over transferring to the proposed £4 million building, which has planning permission for the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street. The surgery, with some 16,000 patients, is currently in Tanner Street and due to be redeveloped in the Silver Hill 2 scheme. But doctors are also worried about their own personal liability over a 21-year lease the City Council is offering. Alex Fitzgerald Barron, senior partner at St Clement's, in a statement said, "St Clement's has been working with a number of parties for over 15 years to secure a new fit-for-purpose and medical facility to provide care in the heart of Winchester for the coming decades. The council requires security prior to embarking on this project, having established planning permission and spent many hours along with the practice negotiating the plan. There are a limited number of options currently available to us within the current partnership model, and we are working to understand what the best option will be, both for the practice and the patients we look after. Whilst we appreciate this is causing some uncertainty and frustration, we remain committed as a partnership to finding a solution and a way forward for both our staff and our patients as soon as possible. General practice is facing many challenges nationally, including recruiting and retaining staff. This has been caused by a workload that is becoming increasingly unmanageable, a lack of certainty about the future of general practice, and the current partnership model, the way in which doctors' practices are set up. One of the problems in terms of recruiting new partners is the risk and liability of signing a 21-year lease on premises for which you become personally liable. The practice continues to believe the partnership model offers the best continuity and bespoke care to the patients it serves, but it has been undervalued and neglected in terms of updating the model to be fit for 21st century patterns of working." Dr. Fitzgerald Barron added, "The government has commissioned a review into the partnership model chaired by Dr. Nigel Watson, a Hampshire GP and chief executive of the local medical committee. This review will report with recommendations by the end of the year. It is envisaged that solutions to this risk will be recommended. Scotland NHS have already underwritten this risk. We apologise for the frustration this has caused to all parties, but remain optimistic. Everyone's continued support and momentary patience in this is hugely appreciated and valued." Councillor Caroline Horrell, City Council leader, in response said, "Thornfield originally proposed constructing a new surgery as part of the Silver Hill scheme. When Thornfield collapsed, the council wanted to ensure that a new surgery was built in Winchester City Centre. And in June 2011, Cabinet confirmed its agreement in principle to the use of the Upper Brook Street car park as a location for a new surgery containing the St Clement's practice. Architecture PLB was engaged to design the surgery, which included provision for a pharmacy, and planning consent was initially granted in July 2012. Consent for a revised design was granted in March 2016, and following the termination of the Silverhill Development Agreement in March 2016, Cabinet decided to continue with the development of the surgery in order to progress a project which served the interests of the health of local residents, a high priority for the Council. The Council approved the construction of the new surgery at Cabinet in September 2017, and £4.2 million has been included in the capital budget to enable the new surgery to be built. The Council has proposed terms to the doctors for a 21-year lease to cover the capital build costs, which will recoup the investment over this period. This project serves the interests and health of the local residents, a high priority for the Council. We are looking forward to hearing from the GPs in the near future regarding their decision.
Now it's over to Noel for the story behind the second headline.
Plans floated to end free passes. Elderly Hampshire residents with free bus passes may have to pay 50p every time they travel under new plans being floated by the County Council. Civic chiefs say if a charge were introduced, it would help fund future public bus services. The council also estimates that a fee for holders of the older person's bus pass would bring in £4.7 million per year. However, the authority admitted that a change in national policy would be needed to bring in the charges. Nevertheless, leader Roy Perry said the authority has no current plans to introduce the fee, despite adding that he hoped the council will be granted a chance to pilot the idea by Westminster. It follows a consultation into public transport in the county. The idea of introducing a fee has also been criticised by residents and local groups who have said they are already causing distress among many pensioners. But Council Leader Roy Perry said that, based on the consultation comments so far, it's clear many respondents would be prepared to pay a little to keep the bus services. He said, "We do need to make savings in our revenue budget, and all areas of expenditure have been reviewed, including support for public transport. A 50p charge would equate to 25% of the average cost of each journey, meaning that council taxpayers would still pay 75% of the cost of each journey made using the older person's pass. Should this happen, it could generate an annual income of up to £4.7 million, enough to cover the cost of all current bus subsidies and community transport, therefore enabling us to maintain current transport provision. As a local authority, our priority is to ensure that our resources are directed to where they are most needed. In consulting on possible changes to the current arrangements for supporting public transport, we will be guided by Hampshire residents to find the fairest and most sensible ways of using the limited funds available to us." However, Devon Candier, chairman of Age Concern Eastleigh, said the proposals were already causing distress among many pensioners, which, he added, could lead to illness. "I understand the council has to balance the books, but it should look at other ways to do it," he said. However, the county's transport boss, Councillor Rob Humby, admitted that the authority needed to tighten its belt, and the charge is a sensible solution for the longer term. He said, "The County Council is not alone nationally in looking to reduce bus subsidy spending in order to respond to budget pressures, but we would wish to do so in ways which would ensure our resources are directed where they are most needed. Through the consultation, we want to explore a range of options with residents to further understand the views of local people." The controversial plans also include the removal of pass holders' fee-free travel on taxi share, dial-a-ride and call-and-go services, which receive funding from the authority. Under the new rules, elderly users would need to pay a subsidised fare of £2.50 or £3.50 per single journey.
Now it's the third headline story, read by Deborah.
And the headline is "Fundraising Mad Hatter Tea Party Remembers Bonnie." Friends and family of a much-loved primary school teacher and dancer who died 10 years ago attended a garden party in her memory to raise funds for Teenage Cancer Trust. Bonnie Wilson, who grew up in Winchester and attended the Florian School of Dance from the age of 8, died of cancer aged 23 in July 2008. Friends from her dance class, school, college and university, many now with children of their own, were reunited to remember happy times and catch up on their lives in the intervening years. The Mad Hatter Tea Party theme was inspired by a scene from a Florian dance show in which she appeared as the March Hare. Her friend, Holly Silk, in whose parents' garden the event was held on Andover Road, was the Mad Hatter. Francesca Perry, who planned the event with Holly, dance teacher Annette Fitzgerald, and Bonnie's mum, Jill, of King Alfred Place, said, "We had a wonderful time celebrating Bonnie and at the same time raising funds for Teenage Cancer Trust, as she did herself during her illness." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of three of the guests, two enormous cakes, and it says that the event has so far raised nearly £1,500.
And that concludes the headline stories. We'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, question and answer my Winchester, editorial comment, first person, Belgarum diary, and letter from Westminster. And we'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Blackburn, Peter John Blackburn, aged 74. Davies, Dorothy Eileen Davies, late of Westman Road, Week, aged 100. Green, Peter Michael Green, aged 82. Rabjohn, Trevor Keith Rabjohn, aged 72 after a short illness. Robson, Kathleen Mary Robson, aged 98. And finally, Shield, Sally Nay Nicholson Shield, and she died aged 83. Now it's over to Deborah, who's going to read the Christian comment.
And this week it's offered by Liz Tatum. And she entitles it, Making Things a Bit Better. There were a few spots of rain today. It was exciting for those few minutes, as it seemed the drought might end. Not being a heat lover, and also watching the land suffering, I have to admit that rain would be a welcome change. I think about people in parts of the world where it never rains, and they have a permanent drought. At least we can still turn a tap on, and although we might face a hosepipe ban, we cannot understand what years of drought feels like. The magnitude of famine and drought in parts of Africa feels too big to do anything about. As we're warned again about global temperature increases and resulting wildfires take hold of our moorlands in this drought, and the terrible all-consuming fires of Greece, California and other places, the firefighters face temperatures beyond anything I could tolerate. To make a difference for perhaps a small piece of land. They fight to make the difference, to make what difference they can and stop further spread of the flames. They try to make it a bit better. A couple of weeks ago, I listened to the testimony of one couple who tended to and protected a badly injured off-duty policeman at the London Bridge attack last year. The young man said several times, "I thought I can make this a bit better." His partner pointed out with a small sigh that he always wanted to make things a bit better, so she followed him and they waded in and helped. The Grenfell Inquiry has heard heartbreaking and yet soul-lifting testimonies of people trying to make a difference, one life, one child. Talking to people on the phone until they faded away, how do those selfless people carry those memories for the rest of their lives? I'm not sure, but they can be assured that most of us admire them and are thankful for their sacrifice to help others. Their determination to make it a little bit better does not go unnoticed. Perhaps every day when we go to sleep, we should wonder if we left the world a bit better than we found it, and ponder on what tomorrow might ask of us. Jesus, of course, came and made it all a lot better. He stood up to those who defended self-rewarding and pointless laws and rules. He defended the poor, the sick, disabled, the prisoners, and always worked to bring those on the margins into the centre by healing, challenging and standing up to what was not right and just. In the end, he paid the ultimate price, an unjust and cruel death, for preaching good news and love. And after that, he went further to make it better for us by rising from that death and opening the doors of heaven so we can look forward to the best destination we can possibly imagine. We shall drink from and bathe in the rivers of living water that he offers now and will provide for all eternity.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 11 letters this week, with one read by, who's going to read it? Oh, Heather, yes.
Taxing the poor. Henry Mead writes, Sir, I am not a resident of Winchester, but am privileged to be a frequent visitor. You will see from your records that I have had reason to comment previously on the parlous state of the bus station and the recent cheapskate upgrade. Now I learn that Councillor Perry is making the disgraceful suggestion that pensioners should be required to pay a supplement to their bus pass in order to avoid cuts to services. Mr. Perry and his party colleagues would do well to travel on the buses themselves as part of their consultation. They would find that the great majority of pass users have insufficient means to own a vehicle or choose to relieve congestion by not using their cars to go to the city centre. Furthermore, a short piece of research would inform them that the government minister with responsibility for buses has clearly outlined the benefits of the free pass. I have heard some pretty outrageous statements from the Conservatives, but is it party policy to tax the poor? Henry Mead, Dargetts Road, Walderslade, Kent.
And Katrina Ward writes about chicken farms. Sir, I hear we're getting 32,000 chickens fairly near Crab Wood, chronicled July 12th and 19th. I can't see the problem. They're free range, which should be our main concern. They'll be checked for health, etc. The shed is rather large, but not much bigger than the shed opposite. As it stands, if the newspapers are to be believed, we will need to create as much as we can of our own food. So is not this a good thing? Hampshire is a farming shire, and as one, I am proud of that. Is this not NIMBYism at its best? The farmer has given all the answers to the questions asked about smell, lorries turning, etc. in the plans. Be proud and help the farmer who is only trying to make a living. What eggs do you buy? Katrina Ward, Walton Place, Stanmore.
And the next letter is entitled Racing Pigs, and it comes from Mrs. J. Pierce. Sir, as a local resident, I am appalled to find that the organisers of this foodie event feel the need to include pig racing as an attraction. This is the 21st century, for goodness sake. Let's have some respect for our fellow creatures. Further, given the current and apparently ongoing heatwave, I dread to think of the welfare issues thus posed. Mm. Will the RSPCA attend to ensure that the pigs are provided with adequate shelter and water? Who will protect these poor creatures from noise and the unwanted attentions of overexcited punters? And never forget, cute little piggies run races, whether they want to or not, But cute little piggies do not remain cute forever. Their ultimate fate is the slaughterhouse. Pigs are intelligent, sentient creatures. They deserve better. Mrs. J. Pierce, London Road, Headbourne Worthy.
Diversion Daft. Michael Bidwell writes, Sir, it was quite a jolt to read two contributions to your letters page on the Chronicle of August the 2nd in support of the Andover Road diversion. Such views seem to be as rare as hen's teeth. What was particularly engaging was the notion that because the diversion proposal would not make congestion at the Albion Junction any worse than it is going to be anyway, that constituted an argument in its favour. This style of reasoning opens up such exciting possibilities in the conduct of rational debate that I feel it should be at once commended to Mr. Trump. At heart, we all know that this is an idiotic scheme to divert a major radial route into a busy city and have it meander through a housing estate. A scheme both idiotic and generally seen as inexplicable and perverse. What is so sad and alarming is that there is no one with the power and courage to stop it. Michael Bidwell, Oliver's Battery Road North, Winchester.
And Barbara Guthrie writes about a Bushfield gift. Sir, the entire Bushfield area is a vital lung for Winchester. It is a green barrier to the south of the city, separating it from the Chandler's Ford, Eastleigh and Southampton conurbation, chronicled July 26th. The four local communities of St Cross, Badger Farm, Oliver's Battery and Stanmore have used the area for lawful recreational pursuits for many years. It is a vital resource for health, fitness and mental well-being for local people. The views are spectacular. The wildlife, both flora and fauna, is abundant and the air is clean. Years ago, somebody walked on Hampstead Heath in London and had a vision of that area being preserved rather than developed. Somebody walked on Waterlow Park, Highgate, and had a vision of that area being preserved rather than developed. And John Muir had a vision for the national parks in the USA. The latest statement about climate change urged the planting of trees and the preservation of green spaces. In our very troubled times, it would be an act of extraordinary environmental generosity for the church commissioners to gift the land at Bushfield, which has laid neglected for years, to the people of Winchester. Barbara Guthrie, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Barbara Lambert, and she entitles it Souls Down River. Sir, if you voted Remain, it may be that you hope for a Brexit disaster that will bring us shaking and quivering back into the European fold, but I doubt it. My guess would be that you recognise our nation, our culture, our history and our future are fast eroding in the weak and frankly pathetic progress of the Brexit so-called negotiations. Last week, I was privileged to visit the Irish Guards headquarters at Wellington Barracks. It was impossible to avoid the steel, the commitment and the sacrifice that the Guards regiments have poured unstintingly into their service to this country for hundreds of years. Back to the Brexit so-called negotiations, where this country is being sold irretrievably down the river, not just its sovereignty, but also its reputation. In or out, we will end this debacle with less respect and less power. Where is the leader who will give us back our self-respect? Barbara Lambert, Nations Hill, Headbourne Worthy.
Sports Centre. Emma Back writes, Sir, there's no wish among local sports groups to delay or put the kibosh on the new Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre, as suggested in a letter last week. We'd hoped for new facilities at Bar End as a legacy from London 2012. And the new centre will open after Tokyo 2020. Progress has been slow, with the council developing plans for both North Walls and the protected King George V fields before rightly focusing on the Garrison Ground Stadium and Depot. In that time, new gyms have opened all over the city, and our community clubs continue to grow, travelling to facilities beyond the city or district as needs be. There is no shortage of demand. Many of the concerns about capacity and functionality now raised by Sport England echo points made by local sports groups many months ago. The council's architects and consultants haven't listened nor adapted their plans. It's no surprise to learn that sports governing bodies and environmental groups have also struggled to be heard, or to see a majority of councillors voting to stop and adjust the plans. If construction had started, then rising costs could be blamed on such delays. But we are not at that stage. It's the consultants' cost estimates that have ballooned, even as the facilities have been cut back. Why? Are the estimates inflated to allow for greater profit? Is the design driving up the cost? Well, the pools will be wonderful, but the other facilities are modest in scale and unlikely to meet the needs of other funders like the university or Hampshire County Council's new Institute of Sport. The council should get a lot more for £40 million and must certainly arrive at a functional design. Nobody wants a legacy of debt or disappointment. Emma Back, Winchester Sport, Arts and Leisure Trust, SALT.
And Simon Lever writes an unusual letter praising our awesome city. Sir, Winchester's historic city centre, the cathedral and vibrant high street are seen by visitors from all over the world as truly awesome. Living on the doorstep of such a wondrous location is indeed amazing and never taken for granted. Just strolling along the high street, the stunning variety of musicians from blues to rock to opera to classical violinists is so magical. What can be more pleasant than sitting on a bench opposite the Buttercross, listening to the music and watching the world go by? Continuing along the high street and looking up at the beautiful gabled buildings is a lesson in history itself, with the past meeting the present in harmony. The excellent market stalls greet the visitor with a wide variety of food, flowers, pastries, plus handmade crafts, with each market day having a particular theme. King Alfred's statue and St Giles Hill, as a backdrop, completes the picture of what Winchester means to those who appreciate and recognise the city's place in England's history and, most importantly, our future prosperity and quality of life. Considering the tremendous upheaval and changing market due to the rampant advance of online everything, Winchester remains a beacon of traditional values and a positive future outlook. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Childline. Sir, thousands of children struggling with body image concerns and mental health difficulties are turning to Childline for help and support about eating disorders. In 2017-18, the NSPCC's Childline service carried about 5,934 counselling sessions about eating disorders and eating problems, up 22% since 2016-17. Almost 9 in every 10 counselling sessions were with girls, including 148 with girls aged 10 to 11. Nearly 1 in 6 counselling sessions mentioned anorexia, 1 in 10 mentioned bulimia, and almost a third negative or distorted body image. In addition, thousands of children who contacted Childline about other mental health issues, including self-harm, also talked about eating disorders or eating problems, bringing the total number of counselling sessions where eating disorders or eating problems were mentioned in 2017-18 to 11,752. Young people say they feel under pressure to look a certain way and live a certain life. The reality is eating disorders are dangerous and can be lethal. It is therefore crucial that these young people receive effective help as soon as possible so that they can go on to enjoy their childhood to the full. Childline is there for those young people, but at the moment we can only answer 3 out of 4 young people who turn to us for help. So we can meet the demand, the NSPCC's Are You There campaign is calling on government to invest some of the £300 million it has committed for children's mental health services towards early support services such as Childline. We cannot do it alone, though. The help we provide must be supplemented by mental health professionals so young people and families can access counselling when they need it the most. And the telephone number of Childline is 0800 11 11, and the letter with all that information was sent in by Wendy Robinson, Childline Service Manager, London Base.
Brexit disaster. Roderick Martin writes, "Sir, Mr. Brian is an active and committed constituency MP, as his letters from Westminster show. Unfortunately, the present political situation requires stronger leadership. The government's handling of Brexit verges on the disastrous, economically and politically. With 15% devaluation of sterling and direct costs of £3.5 billion, the economic consequences are well known and already evident. The political consequences are equally damaging. Mr. Brine's comment that it takes two to tango, in his letter from Westminster on July the 19th, shows a perhaps willful misrepresentation. The United Kingdom is leaving a club whose rules it has accepted for over 40 years. The process of withdrawing is not one of negotiation among equals. The remaining 27 members cannot be expected to change the rules to satisfy a single leaver. The United Kingdom has failed to give serious weight to European concerns, as has long been obvious in the careless approach to Irish interests. Seeking to mobilise individual states against Brussels will naturally arouse hostility from those countries which have invested heavily in the EU project. This may produce short-term gains, but at long-term costs, the main beneficiary of EU division will be Russia. The government is sacrificing Britain to conservative interests, giving priority to party unity. Even Mrs. May's proposed national tour is planned for conservative associations, not the general public. Mr. Brine should recognise that the government is weak and fragile, rather than strong and stable, and likely to fall before 2022 unless saved by Mr. Corbyn. The even-handed approach that our MP advocates is inadequate, with the economy crumbling and the polity fragmenting. At the very least, he should support a genuine parliamentary vote, or preferably a referendum for any eventual EU agreement. Roderick Martin, Mead Road, St Cross, Winchester."
And Peter Lydiard asks some medical questions. "Sir, I was surprised to read in last week's Hampshire Chronicle that Winchester's planners have refused an application for potential use of the St Clement Surgery Building as offices. And this in the same issue of the Hampshire Chronicle, which reported on lack of progress in reaching agreement with the doctors at St Clement's on the terms of their proposed replacement building. There would appear to be a number of interrelated and puzzling issues here. On what planning grounds have the planners refused permission, other than, presumably, because it might interfere with the Silver Hill 2 plans? Why is the replacement building for the St Clement's practice not even agreed, let alone be completed, as promised by the leader of the City Council only a couple of years ago? Why is there so much empty office accommodation in the Silver Hill area, and why has it been kept in such a poor condition? The Friarsgate Surgery Building has been empty for some years. I believe it has been purchased by the City Council, yet it remains an eyesore. Ugly security fencing, boarded up windows, even the grass forecourt remains uncut. The adjacent Health Service Office building is also empty. The offices above the old post office are empty. The offices above King's Walk Shopping Centre are empty. Why is the City Council promoting more office accommodation on the Station Hill site where there is so much empty office accommodation elsewhere? On a more positive note, the antique market, having been left empty for some years, is, hopefully, at last being reoccupied. It would be helpful, I feel, if the City Council could issue a comprehensive statement concerning its intentions for all of these buildings. Peter Lydiard, Parchment Street, Winchester.
And that was the last letter for this week. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. Now it's time for your say. We asked readers whether they agreed with the drugs testing at the gates of the Boomtown Fair. And Deborah's got the answers.
The first one is from Adrian Higgs, 75, a retired coach driver of Downs Road, South Wantson, who said, "You're not going to stop people from taking drugs in, but if they can stop dangerous drugs and help people know what they're taking, it's a sensible thing to do." And Margaret Browbank, 59, of Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, said, "They probably can't keep all the drugs out, so it's a better idea that they at least have them tested. At least this way, they might stop some people from taking something dangerous." And Bob Litchfield, 39, a pie shop owner of Quebec Gardens, Burselden, said, "In an ideal world, there wouldn't be a drug problem. But I think it's forward thinking that they've decided to make sure they're safe beforehand." And finally, Anne Gibson, 68, yoga teacher of North Walls, Winchester, said, "I think it's a very good idea. They're going to take them anyway, and this way they can make sure that what they say they are what they say they are, and hopefully save some lives."
Now we're going back through the mists of time for historical news items from our files, and we'll start with 25 years ago from Heather.
25 years ago, I have two items. Friday, August the 6th, 1993. The £200,000 enhancement scheme in Broad Street, Alsford, has been met with opposing views from local shoppers. One described the changes as marvellous, while another thought they were an absolute tragedy. The recently completed first phase of the scheme incorporates wider pavements, tree bays, new lighting, colourful bricks paving, and alterations to the parking spaces, resulting in the loss of 8 spaces. The scheme was funded by Hampshire County Council, English Heritage, and Alsford Town Trustees. A spokeswoman for the County Council said the scheme was planned when concerns were expressed about lime trees in the road which were suffering or dead. "Under the Hampshire County Towns Initiative programme, we decided to look at the whole of Broad Street. The footways were very narrow." She said the car parking spaces were lost as a result of the larger tree bays, which would allow new limes a better chance. "The trees are due to be planted in November and will be Tilia Prince's Street species, which do not drip sap, which leaves marks on cars." The spokeswoman explained that so far the scheme had only been carried out in the top half of Broad Street and said funding was being reviewed for the rest of the street. And in the second item, an angry Bishop's Waltham couple claim the value of their house has been severely affected after a 15-metre-high cell net mast was constructed in the field opposite, spoiling their open view of the countryside. Roy and Judith Drysdale of Botley Road are amazed that no planning permission was needed to erect the pole and aerials. "It is a very insensitive place to put it, just 12 yards from our house and 4 yards from the road. It's an ugly piece of equipment, and I can't see why it could not have been placed further down the field, which would not have affected any houses," said Mr. Drysdale. They are annoyed that they were given no warning about the pole. And Mrs. Drysdale said, "We have young children and we moved to Bishop's Waltham to bring them up in a nice environment. We live in a green belt and this is such an eyesore. It is ludicrous that planning permission is not needed." William Ostrom, head of corporate communications for Cellnet, said the mast had been erected to improve the reception for mobile phones. "The reason we wanted it there was because there is a problem with the reception for hand-portable cellular telephones elsewhere."
Noel's going to take us back 50 years ago.
Yes, two items from Saturday, August the 10th, 1968. The first one, the Winchester Dig. "The weather has not been very encouraging lately, Two successive Wednesdays have seen the work interrupted by rain, and on a number of other days, grey skies and chilly winds have caused our diggers from overseas to wonder whether the English have a summer at all. This week's news chiefly concerns Brook Street, where the site is still in a state of change. But the new arrangements are becoming clearer. In House 12, an intermediate phase has been reached between two major layouts, where the workshop in the front appears to have areas of rubble and courtyard running eastwards. And the second item, in the shadow of the rundown of civil defence and other voluntary organisations, the Winchester Group Hospital Management Committee has suggested ways in which the National Hospital Service Reserve might be continued as a peacetime service. This 500-strong body, which operates in local hospitals largely as an aid to training, is extremely useful for those, in particular married nurses, who want to continue on a voluntary basis. The committee is delighted to retain their goodwill and usefulness. Mr. H.G. Barrow, Group Secretary, commented, "Instead of disbanding this very valuable corps, we shall be able to keep their services."
We go back 100 years ago. Over to you, Deborah.
Yes, it was Saturday, August the 10th, 1918. Private Harold George Barney, Hampshire Regiment, only son of Mr. and Mrs. G.H. Barney, 14 Hyde Abbey Road, Winchester, who was reported missing in October 1917, is now reported to have been believed killed on the 9th of October 1917 or since. Thus, after a period of 10 months' anxiety, Mr. and Mrs. Barney have had definite official information. Private Barney was, before joining up in October 1916, a dental mechanic, serving an apprenticeship with Mr. L. Balding. He was 20 years of age. And Private C. Gosling, son of Mrs. C. Gosling of 7 Cossack Lane, Winchester, has this week written home to say that he's a prisoner of war. He had been officially posted as missing since March the 28th.
Finally, 200 years ago.
Monday, August the 10th, 1818. We noticed last week that a man named Walker was apprehended on suspicion of having stolen 10 sheep, which he offered for sale in our market at a price considerably below the actual value. This induced suspicion of his dishonesty. He was consequently taken into custody and the sheep advertised with a description of them and the circumstances under which they were found. They have been recognised by Mr. Halcombe of High Trees Farm near Marlborough as his property.
Back to the present now, because we've got Question and Answer My Winchester, read by Noel.
Yes, the respondent is Marcus Rowe, 46, a head teacher from Winchester and co-owner of the Cabinet Rooms, tells us his favourite things about this city. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? Unsurprisingly, the Cabinet Rooms. It's a cool and calm oasis where grown-ups can enjoy some time out to relax. What's your favourite pub or bar? The Old Vine. It's really nice to sit outside and watch the world go by. What's your favourite shop? The Eclectic Hound in the Square. I love their range of interesting and quirky clothes and accessories. What's your favourite building? It changes all the time, but at the moment I would say the Pagoda House on St James's Lane. It's beautiful. And what is Winchester's biggest icon? Ollie Moss. He probably wouldn't like being called an icon because he's a very humble person. He's an artist and designer who creates amazing film posters. He's got an exhibition on at the Discovery Centre at the moment, and everyone should go and see it. What's Winchester's best kept secret? The secret film club at the Cabinet Rooms. They show films in a different theme every month. It's Elvis themed this month. What's the best thing about Winchester? Oh, the people. They're very friendly, and it's always a pleasure having conversations with people in shops and around town. And the worst? Finding parking is always difficult, especially at Christmas time. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? I would love to see the Broadway turned into a pedestrianised marketplace. Describe Winchester in a sentence. An ancient but vibrant city with a vibrant food and drink scene.
Right. Now we have got the editorial comment, and it's going to be read by Deborah.
Yes, and it's their comment on the St Clement's surgery. Questions over the future of a Winchester GP surgery are starting to be answered. We thank the St Clement's practice for the statement that explains its position over the impasse with the City Council surrounding the relocation from its 1960s building on Tanner Street to the proposed £4 million centre on Friarsgate. If it was publicity in the Hampshire Chronicle that focused the GP's minds, then that is another example of the necessity of the local press. The 16,000 patients on the books will be more than interested to know the surgery's thoughts. The issue for the doctors is the uncertainty over the future of the NHS and their own personal liability at signing a 21-year lease. These fears are, of course, understandable. Anyone would think twice if their own mortgage would be in jeopardy should something go wrong with their workplace. But this situation does still look slightly ridiculous. Planning permission has been given for a new medical centre. The money is there to build it. The current building will deteriorate. The proposed surgery is state of the art. And yet a deal is said to be looking unlikely. It is in everyone's interests that the agreement between the GPs and the council is concluded. Perhaps a little more give and take is needed from the council. Hard bargains are all very well, but not in these circumstances.
Heather's going to read an alternative look at the news with Belgarum Diary.
This is a very visual piece. It has three illustrations of the water garden in Colebrook Street. It's a very nice little garden, just on your right as you turn off Colebrook Street to go towards the cathedral. But its future has been uncertain following its sale to a consortium which has discussed developing the garden in a conversation with the City Council in the spring. Now, there are two small photographs, one of clearance work in 2008 and the other of the a view of the water garden as it is now. The council recently said that one of the consortium members, Alan Stone, has said there's no intention of building on the plot, but potentially using it to host functions. It has the water in the middle and grassy areas either side, so presumably that's what they're thinking of using. Belgarum spotted a colourful print by well-known local artist Josephine Chisholm in the window of Kingsgate Prince, and it is really nice. It shows the arch through to the cathedral, and it's got people leaning on the wall and walking through with their dogs, and a nice drawing of the water garden as it is now, with the water stretching to and the flowering trees and a couple of pillars. Now, Josephine Chisholm specialises in local views in vibrant colours, and yes, it is very vibrant. Miss Chisholm of Nuns Road, Hyde, holds art classes in the city at the Winchester Rugby Club at Abbots Barton on Wednesday mornings and afternoons, mostly for adults, and can be contacted by email on josephinechisholm@gmail.com.
Now it's going to be first person, and this week's first person is by Ron Allison, and it's read by Noel.
And it's titled Hot Start Too Early. Over the years in this column, I may have just mentioned an interest in and enjoyment of football, particularly the trials and tribulations and successes of Southampton. Even so, I was amazed and somewhat disappointed to realise last Friday that the English Football League was starting that day, August the 3rd, the first week of August, coinciding with the third day of the first five test matches between England and India. That was absurd. The early weeks of August are for cricket and other summer sports. Surely September through to May is long enough for a football season, even with all the competitions and playoffs. And yes, I do love the game. But now to other matters that some may think even of being more important than when the football season starts. What about the weather? According to one forecast I heard over the weekend, it may well be raining by the time this week's Chronicle is in your hands. I guess the general feeling will be that this is a good thing, that we need a shower or two, and I for one would agree. Love the hot spell, but a short break would be fine. However, I become more and more concerned about the wider view of our climate, and not just about rain in Hampshire. Brexit and the European Union may well be at the top of the political agenda, but I, for one, would be much happier if I was assured that the great minds of this world were concentrating on our planet's longer-term meteorological future. What is really happening? Are things getting just a little bit warmer in the Northern Hemisphere, or is something far more long-term and significant going on? I listen to and read varying forecasts and prophecies and end up little the wiser. Well, I long ago realised that there is much that I will never understand, and that we all have to put at least some aspect of our own lives into the hands of others. So far, so good. Thanks to doctors, dentists, scientists, farmers, pilots and train drivers, teachers, plumbers, shopkeepers, and name your own heroes and heroines. I just hope that those who will be dealing with the global warming and its consequences will prove as reliable as those experts who are so essential to our well-being. I do now, these days, spend a fair amount of time looking back over my life and remembering so many who contributed to it. At the time, I did not appreciate, certainly not fully, the part they were playing in my development. I think obviously of my parents and other family members, but also prominent at various times were teachers, church leaders, the assistant at local lending library in Bournemouth, the men and women who helped run the youth clubs I attended, and all those who coached me at various sports, with, I have to admit, varying degrees of success. Above all, the family and my friends. I doubt if at the time I thanked them as I should have done, but as long as I was showing my appreciation in other ways, and at least from time to time helping others along their particular way, I hope matters at least evened out. I think, looking back, that overall my generation benefited from not having much in the way of gizmos or IT. If we wanted to communicate, other than by letter, fat chance, we needed to be together, face to face, talking, joking, at times no doubt quarrelling, but always having real contact. I think the truth nearly always came out in those contacts.
That's Letter from Westminster, read by Deborah.
And of course it's from Steve Brine. As a health minister in the current government, I'm familiar with calls for extra public spending. The NHS, as it celebrates its 70th, doesn't need a birthday card, and it certainly doesn't need us to restore funding to the levels it used to enjoy pre-2010, because that would mean less money for the service. What it needs is investment. I'm proud of the part I've been able to play in securing a new five-year budget settlement for the NHS. This means that in cash terms, the budget will have increased by over one quarter in 5 years' time, with an extra £600 million a week, not just £350 million, by the end of the period. Year on year since 2010, the NHS budget has increased, meaning every part of our country and our health service will feel the benefit as we move closer to a safe, high-quality healthcare for all. Alongside the day job, my work now turns to producing a new long-term plan for the NHS that has prevention at its core. That is around public health interventions, immunisation, integrated primary care, and it goes hand in hand with an updated cancer strategy for England, where I am determined our ambition will match our spending. There's great experience as well as knowledge among my constituents, so I would welcome contributions. You have an experienced constituency MP working at the heart of government, so do get in touch. Health may be the public's number one spending priority, but as we move towards the spending review next year, my attention is also turning to education. It came up a few times last week as I began my 2018 summer tour, and rightly so. I'm acutely aware of funding pressures in schools and preschools, and constituents will remember I made this a centrepiece of my communication at last year's general election. Indeed, I've argued with government for some time for increased school funding, a bigger overall funding envelope. And that happened as a result of the election because of a promise we inserted into the Conservative manifesto. Obviously, I welcome the government's commitment via the national funding formula to a fairer system for allocating school funding and the extra £1.3 billion made available for schools between 2018 and 20. But, as I've said many times, the fact is Hampshire remains one of the lowest funded local education authorities in England when compared to other areas. As an example, Tower Hamlets receives £5,893 per pupil block funding, whereas Hampshire gets £3,763. So I will go on arguing for that to be addressed and to remain closer to the £40 campaign. Any Chancellor faces very tough choices at a spending review, and I don't ever get emails from constituents suggesting ways we can spend less money. So I think education needs to make a sensible and well-reasoned case starting now. It worked in health. See full details of my summer tour at stevebryne.com/summertour2018. And he signs it Steve Bryne, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for Public Health.
Now here's what's on. Winchester Cathedral lunchtime recitals on Tuesday. There's on August the 14th, we've got Harry Rylance on piano. Everyone's welcome. Concerts are free and there's a retiring collection. Also, Tuesday lunchtime recitals are every week at Romsey Abbey from 1:10pm to 1:50pm. Bring your lunch or coffee and enjoy an informal half hour or so of good music. Again, it's free, with a retiring collection in aid of Romsey Abbey Music. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 10th of August at 5:44am and it begins at 8:36pm. On Wednesday the 15th of August, it ends at 5:52am and begins at 8:27pm. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. In terms of general news, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
The headline is Win a Quilt to Aid Blood Transport Charity. And there's a picture of four smiling people, and in front of them is a bike, a motorbike, and draped over it is a really beautiful traditional quilt. This beautiful quilt, donated by Yasmin Duggan and lovingly hand-quilted by members of Wessex Quilt Makers, is being raffled in aid of Serve Wessex. Serve Wessex is a charity which provides free, out-of-hours transport of blood products and other urgent supplies for NHS hospitals, and the charity is run entirely by volunteers and relies on public donations. Wessex Quilt Makers is a long-established, Winchester-based patchwork and quilting group. Their latest exhibition, Nearly 40, is being held on Friday and Saturday, August the 17th to 18th, in the Middlebrook Centre, Winchester, from 10 till 4:30. It costs £2.50 to go to the exhibition. On show will be a variety of members' work, together with quilts made for the Linus charity. Tickets for the raffle quilt will be on sale. A bag tombola will raise funds for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, and proceeds from the sales table will be donated to the Winchester Hospice Appeal, seeking funds for the proposed facility at Burrell House on Romsey Road. Visitors to the exhibition can enjoy refreshments in a comfortable seating area and browse our quilting traders. And the people in the photograph are Joan Holloway, who's the chairman of Wessex Quiltmakers, Sarah White, the exhibition chairman of Wessex Quiltmakers, Neil Stocker, who is a member of Serve Wessex, and Judy Hickman, who is the treasurer at Wessex Quiltmakers.
Tighter control of shared houses. The civic chiefs have announced more powers to help keep tenants safe in Winchester. The City Council has announced it will widen the scope of licensing houses in multiple occupation, HMOs, as of October the 1st. Currently, mandatory licensing of HMOs only applies in buildings of three or more stories, but the change means all privately rented homes in multiple occupation with five or more residents will require licenses. HMO landlords must apply for a licence by October the 1st, and failure to do so will be a criminal offence. It's not the first time the council has sought to better control HMOs, having taken steps to reduce the number in Winnall and Stanmore by removing some automatic planning rights. Councillor Caroline Horrell said, "I welcome the fact that the government has passed this legislation, as I know that the issue of HMOs in Winchester and the wider district is a hot topic for our residents."
Home care provider hailed by inspectors. Bluebird Care of Alton and Alsford has been rated outstanding by the Care Quality Commission following an inspection in May. Inspectors rated the service outstanding for being safe, effective, caring, responsive to people's needs and well-led. Bluebird Care is a domiciliary care agency that provides personal care to people living in their own homes. There were 72 people receiving care at the time of the inspection. Deborah Ivanova, Deputy Chief Inspector of Adult Social Care, said Bluebird Care is a service where the staff and management operate with a real sense of team spirit and provide care that people describe to us as exceptionally caring. Comments about the standard of care were overwhelmingly positive and included, "If I ask for anything, it is no trouble and they're very kind and willing." We found numerous examples of the high-quality care provided, including one person being helped to regain their independence after staff assisted the person to reapply for their driving licence after an illness. The service was rated outstanding overall during our previous inspection in January 2016, and I'm delighted that the quality of care provided has continued to improve, so that the service has not only achieved a second outstanding overall rating, but is now also rated outstanding in all areas. Some of the key findings from the inspection include staff were able to provide a particularly responsive service based on people's needs, but managed to be flexible enough to adapt to changes. There was a robust plan in place to ensure when outside events occurred, these did not impact upon service delivery. This plan, coupled with the commitment of the care and management team, ensured that no calls were missed during the snowy weather in March.
Firefighters called to tackle huge barn blaze near Alsford, and there's a very dramatic photograph against a purple sky of a barn blazing. That's orange flames, orange smoke, and even the water being hosed on it is illuminated by those flames and looks orange. It's a really dramatic picture. Firefighters worked throughout the night to bring a barn blaze under control after it caught fire the previous afternoon. Crews rushed to the barn in Byton Hill, Ropley, near Alsford, after reports of the fire at around 10 to 4 last Wednesday. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman said the cause of the blaze is thought to have involved a forklift truck before spreading to the open-sided building. The exact cause of the fire in the vehicle was unclear, but it is not thought to have been arson. At one point, the barn was fully alight, and in total an estimated 1,500 bales of hay were destroyed. Fighters from Winchester, Alsford, Droxford, Alton, Petersfield, Basingstoke and Cosham stations were involved. Engineers from the electricity board were also deployed, as the barn used to store hay bales is near to power cables. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service statement said that the incident was later scaled down, and only one crew remained at the scene to damp down a nearby hedgerow. The service has warned the public to take care with flames in the tinder dry conditions.
Increase in numbers of armed police deployed. Armed police are being deployed to increasing numbers of incidents in Hampshire as the number of armed officers reached a 10-year high. An explosion in violent crime combined with the threat of terrorism has left officers routinely fearing the worst, according to the Police Federation of England and Wales. This has led to them routinely calling for armed assistance when faced with the violent incidents. The latest Home Office figures show that Hampshire Police conducted 283 armed police operations in the 12 months to March 2018. This was an increase from the previous year, when armed officers attended 189 operations. The number of armed police officers has also increased, rising from 95 in 2017 to 126 as of the end of March this year. According to the National Police Chiefs Council, recruitment drives for armed counter-terrorism officers have been ongoing in the areas of England and Wales most at risk from terrorism. However, many forces have struggled to recruit the numbers they need. Across England and Wales, the number of armed police operations in the year to March reached 18,746, the highest number since 2010-11. Che Donald, Vice Chair and Firearms Lead for the Police Federation of England and Wales, said there has been an explosion in violent crime over the past year, with knife crime up by 16%, murders by 12% and gun crime by 2%. In this current climate, if officers are called to a violent incident, the preferred option is to deploy properly trained firearms officers to contain the situation. All this is set against a backdrop of increased awareness because of recent terrorist events such as the London Bridge attack and the Manchester Arena, which fall into the timescale of this report. As a result, there has also been a heightened presence of firearmed officers at events and public gatherings around the country to ensure people are kept safe. A spokesman for the Home Office said that the government is providing £144 million to increase the numbers and capacity of armed police. And this is accompanied by a rather sinister picture of two white hands and a large black gun.
Sun and music at Wickham Festival. Thousands of music lovers descended on a sun-bathed Wickham at the weekend and enjoyed music, writes James Johnson. Top late 1970s new wave band Squeeze headlined the festival, which ran from Thursday and finished on Sunday. One of Britain's top bands of the past 40 years, the hugely popular Icons, topped the bill on Saturday, and supported by John Ilsley of Dire Straits, the Tom Robinson Band and Ferocious Dog, among others. Revellers got kitted out in colourful clothing and danced the day away at the annual event. The family-friendly festival saw 18 acts take to the stage, with the Remnant Kings and the Northern Irish punk band The Undertones closing out the weekend on Sunday evening with their legendary Teenage Kicks. As well as the rock music, there was strong folk element and the appearance of a number of Morris dancing sides.
MPs backed prescription of cannabis for medical need. Winchester MP Steve Brine has welcomed news that specialist clinicians will be able to legally prescribe cannabis-derived medicinal... MPs back prescription of cannabis for medical need. Winchester MP Steve Brine has welcomed news that specialist clinicians will be able to legally prescribe cannabis-derived medicinal products by the autumn. Mr. Brine, the Public Health Minister, said it was absolutely right that the Home Secretary has decided to reschedule these products after receiving advice from experts during the two-part review he commissioned in June. It means that senior clinicians will be able to prescribe the medicines to patients with an exceptional clinical need. The Department for Health and Social Care and the Medicines and Health Products Regulatory Agency, MHRA, will now develop a clear definition of what constitutes a cannabis-derived medicinal product so they can be rescheduled and prescribed. Only products meeting this definition will be rescheduled. Other forms of cannabis will be kept under strict controls and will not be available on prescription. In the meantime, clinicians will still be able to apply to the independent expert panel on behalf of patients wishing to access these products. The Home Secretary also confirmed that all licence fees for applications made to the panel will be waived, whilst no fees will be charged in respect of applications which have already been granted. The government has been clear that the announcement does not pave the way towards legalising cannabis for recreational use. The penalties for unauthorised supply and possession will remain unchanged. Mr. Brine added, "Recent cases involving sick children made it clear to many of us in government that our position on cannabis-related medicinal products was not satisfactory. That is why we launched a review and set up an expert panel to advise on licence applications in exceptional circumstances. And following advice from two sets of independent advisers, the Home Secretary has taken the decision to reschedule cannabis-derived medicinal products, meaning they will be available on prescription, and that is absolutely right, in my opinion. This will help patients with an exceptional clinical need, but is in no way a first step to the legalisation of cannabis for recreational use." In the first part of the review commissioned by the Home Secretary, the Chief Medical Adviser, Professor Dame Sally Davis, concluded that there is evidence that medicinal cannabis has therapeutic benefits. The Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs carried out the second part of the review, considering the appropriate schedule for cannabis-derived medicinal products based on the balance of harms and public health requirements.
Pig racing gets the chop after campaign. Sorry about that. A Hampshire festival has pulled plans to host pig racing later this month following a petition that gained more than 46,000 signatures. Following talks, organisers at the Winchester Cheese and Chilli Festival have axed the races and have also confirmed they won't be included next year. It follows criticism from online campaigners who were left cheesed off with the event due to take place at the Garrison Ground on August the 18th to the 19th, claiming that the animals would be left frightened by the crowds and would suffer as a result of the current heatwave. In response, Simon Stewart from the festival told the Chronicle, "Though liaising with the RSPCA, the local authority and the operator, as the hot weather is going to continue, we've decided that it's in the pigs' interest to withdraw pig racing from the event this year. We will not be offering pig racing again next year either." The operator is Joseph's Amazing Camels, who I'm sure can comment on how well the animals are cared for throughout the year. Not camel racing, notice. The move has been met with joy by campaign group Pigs Don't Race, who launched the petition that labelled animal racing as cruel and exploitative. In a post on their Facebook page, a spokesman said, "Success! The pig race at the Cheese and Chilli Festival in Winchester has been cancelled. Thank you to everyone who signed and shared the petition." The Winchester Festival is just one of the events to have been targeted by the group, with the Facebook page featuring campaigns from around the country. Among those to have signed the petition was Winchester resident Janet Pierce, who said she was appalled to find that the organisers of this foodie event feel the need to include pig racing, adding, "This is the 21st century, for goodness sake. Let's have some respect for our fellow creatures." Taking place between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m, events at the Cheese and Chilli Festival will range from man versus food competitions and cooking demonstrations to live music and face painting. Winchester marks the last stop for the event, which has been touring since early June. And this is accompanied by a picture of pig race at Farmers Market in Winchester in 2013. And there's four pigs and they're running towards the camera. And I have to admit, they don't look particularly frightened. They look as if they're just knowing what they're doing. Anyway.
Converted Church in City wins Property Award. A project which saw a Winchester church converted into luxury homes won an award. St Thomas's Church Development won Regeneration Project of the Year Award at the South Coast Property Awards. The Grade 2 listed church on Southgate Street, which has been converted into 9 homes, was redeveloped by Southampton-based Hemdean. Each home includes allocated parking with electric charging points, private lift access, fitted kitchens, underfloor heating and fully integrated speaker systems. Jane Kennelly, head of residential development sales at Savills, Winchester, who is marketing St Thomas, said, "We're delighted that St Thomas has received such a well-recognised and prestigious award. As an important landmark building within Winchester, it was vital that the conversion was carried out sympathetically by a skilled team. Hemdean Builders have done a remarkable job by creating a collection of wonderful individual homes which preserve the splendour of the building, enabling it to be enjoyed by generations to come." And there are 2 large pictures of 2 of the rooms in these houses, and they still very much look like a church. There are religious paintings on the walls in the middle of the lounge with a settee in front and enormously tall ceilings. And the kitchen has got arched windows with leaded lights and an arched shaped doorway. Looks fascinating, but quite a strange place to live, I think. The Church Coast Property Awards Gala Dinner and Awards presentation was held at the Hilton at the Aegeus Bowl. Now in its 3rd year, it's the leading property event in the region, attracting over 400 guests and entries from commercial and residential sectors. Rob Newbold, Managing Director of Hemdean, said, "As the developer and main contractor for the St Thomas project, we're delighted to have received the Regeneration Project of the Year Award at the South Coast Property Awards."
Overdose for man with a heart of gold. A Winchester man with a heart of gold took a deliberate overdose after struggling to cope with a number of stressful events in his life, an inquest heard. Elias Mazzani had been suffering from chronic pain after 2 separate assaults left him with leg injuries and a workplace incident left him with back problems. However, Winchester Coroner's Court heard that the 32-year-old, originally from Zimbabwe, had also been struggling to cope after a new relationship broke down, his benefit payments were cut, and he was concerned about an upcoming medical operation. Mr. Mazzani had previously been living in Southampton, where the attacks took place, and moved to Winchester in the hope that it might solve some of his problems. The inquest heard that his friend and former partner, Emma Hills, whom he had lived with in Southampton for a number of years, rushed to his flat in Imber Road, Winnall, Winchester, on December the 8th, after receiving worrying text messages, including fears of being followed and a reference to making a will. Ms. Hills, who described Mr. Mazzani as having a heart of gold, said that his mood could be low sometimes and that he had nightmares as a result of the assaults. She added, "He felt the world was against him. His benefits changed regularly and he struggled with that. He did gamble sometimes and that would put him in a low mood." Ms. Hills said she was unable to get hold of Mr. Mazzani on the day he died and was let into the building where he lived by a neighbour, although the key had been left inside the lock to Mr. Mazzani's flat to stop anyone getting in. Police were called to break down the door, and they found Mr. Mazzani surrounded by alcohol and medication, and despite attempts to revive him, he was declared dead at the scene. Consultant pathologist Dr. Alan Adnam Al-Badri told the inquest that fatal levels of Mr. Mazzani's prescription medication were found in his body along with alcohol. Recording a conclusion of suicide, Senior Central Hampshire Coroner Graham Short said Mr. Mazzani had a history of depression. In the period before, leading up to his death, he was feeling low in mood for a number of reasons.
Life-saving kit is bought by M&S. a local crowdfunding campaign to equip Winchester High Street with a life-saving defibrillator has drawn the support of Marks & Spencer Winchester. The local store has donated a public access defibrillator, PAD or PAD, unveiled by store manager Chris Berry. The PAD, installed on Middlebrook Street, will give the local community 24-hour access to life-saving equipment. If used within 3 minutes of cardiac arrest, the device can improve a person's chance of survival by as much as 70%. The crowdfunding campaign, launched by Action Hampshire earlier this year, highlighted the PADs in the city and the potential risk to local life due to poor access to such devices in the event of emergency. The PAD, this PAD, is the only machine in the pedestrianised area of the High Street that is available to the community 24 hours a day. Chris Berry, store manager, said, "On hearing about the lack of access to a PAD on the High Street, we felt it necessary to support the local community and purchase this vital piece of equipment. Our building is in a prime location, at the heart of the High Street and easily accessible. As and when we need it, we hope it will save lives in our community. We will be offering our staff comprehensive training with demonstrations on how to use the defibrillator correctly so they are prepared in an emergency." And there's an accompanying picture of the defibrillator on a brick wall.
Military Museum and VC Heroes. The heroism that soldiers displayed to win the Victoria Cross is the subject of the summer exhibition at a Winchester Military Museum. This year's exhibition at the Royal Green Jackets Rifles Museum at Winchester at Peninsula Barracks focuses on the heroic riflemen who served during the 1914-18 war. There are 23 soldiers who served with the former regiments of the Royal Green Jackets who were awarded the Victoria Cross. Individual stories of each of these recipients are told in the exhibition, together with photographs and citations of the deeds for which the Victoria Cross was awarded. One was George Peachment, who enlisted 3 weeks before his 18th birthday and posted to the King's Royal Rifle Corps. He was killed in 1915 trying to save his officer. To coincide with the exhibition, there will be a World War I storyteller present on Wednesdays throughout August, explaining what it was like to be serving in the trenches during the Great War. Rifleman Rivel will be talking to visitors at 11:15, 12:15 and 2:15 on August the 1st, 8th, 15th, 22nd and 29th. And there's a photograph of a mock-up of a trench with corrugated iron walls, and the real Rifleman Rivel, who looks incredibly young, he looks about 12, and the actor who is playing the part, who looks considerably more healthy and grown up. And on this corrugated iron, there's a hook with a hand-painted sign that says, "Do not stand about here. If you're not hit, somebody else will be."
Sun and stalls at Trout and About. Hundreds of people took in the sunshine at Stockbridge's annual food festival. Trout and About is held on the first Sunday of August every year, and visitors flocked to the town to explore this festival. With more than 100 stalls of local produce and craft, food lovers were entertained by live music and demonstrations. Some of the other attractions included Test Valley Turners, who were demonstrating wood turning, and Test Valley Nordic walking. Many of the visitors also tried their best to spot the trout swimming in the River Test that runs along the High Street. And there's a photograph. The river is completely lined by people leaning over, hoping to spot the trout. There's an artist, Charlotte Trim, who is actually painting there and then. There's people sampling the local produce, which includes burgers, beer, hot dogs. And there are two photographs of the gin tent, which is obviously very popular.
Thomas steams into Oxford. Families lined the platform last weekend to take a ride on the world's favourite little blue tank engine, which pulled in at the watercress line. Thomas the Tank Engine was accompanied by the Fat Controller and Rusty, the Thomas-themed entertainer, to greet young fans, who also got to enjoy the addition of funfair rides and special food treats at the Alsford attraction. However, if you missed out on seeing Thomas, he will still be at the watercress line, ending his time there on Sunday. Visitors can enjoy unlimited trips pulled by famous engines throughout the day. Children can shake hands with the Fat Controller and also take part in lots of other Thomas-themed activities at the Imagination stations. For foodie visitors, a variety of local delicacies with a unique twist will be served, including the Cookie Bar Bus, a vintage bus serving speciality teas and snacks. Alsford Station's West Country Buffet will also be passing through.
Bellman's celebrates 2 years in the city. Bellman's Auctioneers held a summer soiree to celebrate 2 years at the Red House in Winchester. More than 140 people attended the evening event at the Hyde Street headquarters, including the Mayor of Winchester, Frank Pearson, local dignitaries, friends and clients. Drinks and canapés were enjoyed, as well as live music from three talented local musicians, Joy Surrender, Henry Newbury and Joanna Thorne, who entertained with a varied programme including classical, rock and pop. Ian Rushbrook, Senior Director, said, "It was wonderful to have been able to celebrate 2 years of Bellman's at the Red House on a beautiful summer evening with so many friends and clients. I've worked in Winchester for almost 40 years, with over 30 years at the Red House. On behalf of Julian, myself and the team here, I'd like to thank you for your tremendous support in making this the most successful sale room very much part of the life of Winchester, and I look forward to working with you in the future. We were very privileged to have had three very talented local musicians to entertain us with such a diverse programme. The business has grown significantly since Bellman's first auction in Winchester in September 2016, and the sale calendar now comprises 5 2-day sales, each containing some 1,500 lots, and being made up of specialist sections for all the major disciplines: jewellery and watches, pictures and prints, silver, coins and medals, furniture, art, clocks, ceramics, Asian, rugs, textiles and luxury goods."
Ex-councillor defends new role, and there's a picture of former Winchester City Councillor Ian Tate. "A former City Councillor has defended his new role with housing developers. Ian Tate is working with a number of firms as they try to develop sites across the district. Mr. Tate was a Conservative City Councillor from 1999 to the election this May, when he lost his seat. Throughout that time, he took a keen interest in planning, serving on the committee for many years, and was a supporter of social housing. But now some planning campaigners have expressed concern about Mr. Tate's new role. Mr. Tate told the Chronicle, "Over the last 20 years, I have sat through more planning committees than anyone else, and I think I have a reasonable understanding." He said in general he's not being paid for the advice he is giving to developers, although he is on a retainer for one firm, which he declined to name. "It would be wrong to say I'm now a planning consultant. I have got personal issues with my mum, aged 91, in hospital, so I don't have the time at the moment. I have knocked on every door in Winchester. I know it's better than estate agents. I know the human geography behind most sites. I'm advising developers to do public engagement, to talk to neighbours." Mr. Tate of Berwick Road says he is passionate about keeping Winchester a city of all classes. "I would like to promote the delivery of affordable housing in Winchester. The city is becoming too middle class, pricing out the working class. I am a friend of good development and a friend of affordable housing. That is my interest. I think we should build a second Barton Farm, a city council scheme primarily affordable housing. We all live in houses and we need more of them." Mr. Tate said he harbours ambitions to return to the City Council.
Festival unveils respect campaign. Boomtown Fair has unveiled its new flagship mission for the year, the all-encompassing respect campaign. Evolving from the harm reduction campaign in 2017 that brought in drug safety testing organisation The Loop, the campaign covers all aspects of harm reduction. It consists of three pillars: self-respect, respecting others, respecting the environment. The event on the Matterley Estate is now in its 10th year, and this weekend we'll see performances from Gorillaz, reggae legend Jimmy Cliff and Limp Bizkit. Boomtown, which starts today, actually that's Thursday, says it is acknowledges that respect is a two-way street and has invested a huge amount to further benefit their audience's experience. This means an increase in safety measures, infrastructure and the facilities needed to help keep people safe. The festival has been given permission to open a day early for a limited number of revelers, but only if they arrive by public transport. Boomtown will again be providing pre-event education and awareness, on-site drug safety testing provided by The Loop, roaming campsite welfare teams, 24-hour campsite hubs, fully equipped 24-hour on-site medical facilities, welfare and counselling services, along with the on-site police station and a security staff. There will also be general welfare messaging and provisions to ensure those in attendance can look after themselves, keep hydrated and are well rested. The respect each other element of the campaign includes a zero tolerance policy to harassment of any kind, continued work with Safe Gigs for Women, as well as raising awareness of what constitutes harassment alongside the AIF Safer Spaces campaign. Increasing the awareness of accessibility support by working with Attitude is Everything and Deaf Zone to provide a host of dedicated features for people with accessible or medical requirements. There will also be dedicated LGBTQ+ spaces of celebration and inclusivity, and behind the scenes work into actively discouraging and raising awareness of cultural appropriation. And it shows the campaign's official logo, which is a triangle made of three arms and hands linked together. The word respect is in the middle of the triangle, and the three arms of the triangle are labelled. The bottom one is your city, the next one is yourself, and the next one is each other.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Sonia Phillips and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you've had an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.